this is Lewis.
And this is Ian.
And welcome to 101 Films You Should Have Seen.
Probably.
So, before we get started this week,
we've got some correspondence.
So, thanks for your recommendations, Connor. You sent us a whole list of films. We've kind of...
A long old list.
Long old list, yeah, it's good.
Who do you think you are, Connor?
Hey, don't berate the listeners, blimey. Jeez, we need all of them we can get.
No, I know. It's fantastic. Thank you so much, Connor, for your list. It's much appreciated.
Yeah, really good. Some good films on there.
We've seen a few of them. We've gone through it. A couple of them we've seen already. Both of us have seen already, so unfortunately we can't do those. As much as I'd love to do Young Frankenstein,
yeah, which is a favourite of mine, it's good, but we've both seen it.
We have both seen it. Yeah. But we've chosen four films from your list to do.
That's Sunset Boulevard. Great film. I was going to do that one anyway. It's a fantastic film.
Yeah. The Big Lebowski, which I've seen a bit of.
A bit of.
I can't remember. I think I've seen the first, like, half an hour. So, yeah, definitely. I feel that's not enough. I think we're warranted to be able to watch that all the way through.
Shadow of a Doubt, which is an early Hitchcock, which I've seen most of Hitchcock films, but I haven't seen that one, so that'll be good.
And of course, the subject of today's podcast,
Brick. It's good. We're doing monosyllabic films. Last week it was Crank. This week it's Brick.
Next week it will be
Fence.
Yeah. So Brick.
Yeah. So Brick. Well, thanks for your recommendation, Connor. But, a little bit lukewarm reception on this one.
Yeah. Unfortunately, we were in two minds about this, weren't we, Lewis? Mm.
Well, I kind of wanted to see it anyway, because I'd actually already borrowed the DVD off a friend. And
I can vouch for that.
So, well, when the recommendation from Connor came in, I thought, oh, perfect, we can do it this week. Fantastic. Yeah. Bit of an odd one.
We didn't particularly enjoy it.
No.
I think
it's the first one we've actually kind of both not enjoyed.
No, not
that
really
much.
I got the feeling that I enjoyed it less. No, hang on. I less enjoyed it less than you.
I less enjoyed it less. Yeah, so you liked it a bit more.
Oh, that's it. Oh, if only English was my first language. This podcast would be so much better. Uh-huh. Yeah.
Anyway, before we get into this, we should just kind of give a brief description of what the film's about.
Yeah, do you want to do the pitch?
Yeah, Bugsy Malone, but with film noir instead of gangsters.
And no splat guns.
No splat guns.
Yeah, it's a kind of film noir detective film set in a high school.
Yeah, and that's where it goes wrong.
In your humble opinion.
In my humble opinion.
Yeah. So it has all the trappings of film noir. It has the kind of feel. It's shot very much like a kind of classic detective movie.
Yeah, it's very much inspired by like The Maltese Falcon and Chinatown.
Yeah, the dialogue is really rapid. Lots of kind of slang, obscure kind of slang, which is difficult to understand.
Yeah.
But it's all set in high school. Yeah. So it's being investigated by a high school student into a fellow high school student's murder. There aren't any real adult figures except the assistant.
Someone's mum turns out.
Oh, someone's mum and one of the assistant
vice principal.
Principal of the school. But other than that, it's just all kind of teenage students, but very much kind of American film teenagers.
Yeah.
In the sense they're supposed to be playing, 16-year-olds and they look about 24,
25. Yeah, I think most of the actors are about 30 in this film, so it's kind of odd to see them playing as teenagers. Although Tommy will always be
Of course, that's what we should say.
It's got Tommy from Third Rock from the Sun. I still can't get used to calling him Joseph Gordon-Levitt.
No, 101 Film's favourite character, favourite character actor.
He seems to be cropped up in almost all our podcasts for some reason.
Yeah, he has cropped up a lot. Obviously, he was in Inception. Yeah. He came up a couple of times before as well, and I can't remember the circumstances. I think it's where we talked about 500 Days of Summer.
That's right,
he's in that, where we talked about our Valentine's Day special. But yeah, so the film's interesting.
Mm,
let's start with let's start with the positives. The film's interesting.
It is interesting.
It's well
shot. It's unusual.
It's a fascinating idea, taking the kind of tropes of that detective genre, of that film noir genre, and then transporting them into something quite different, putting them in a completely different environment.
Yeah.
It's Tommy's great in it.
Yes.
It's a good performance.
He is good, you know, he doesn't miss a beat, you know. He manages to mumble out all that dialogue perfectly. You're struggling here.
No. It's the first film by the director. It's the director's first film. What's his name?
Ryan Johnson? Yeah.
So it's quite an impressive first film.
Ferris school project, maybe. Anyway, before we wander into this too much.
Look at how negative he's being. Sorry, apologies for this, Connor. How negative you are.
Oh, dear. Well, before we get too much into it, let's do the trivia quiz. Get this out.
Oh, dear, that's a bad sign. 5 minutes in, we're already on to trivia quiz.
Okay, question one. The Pin, stupid name. The Pin asks Brendan whether he's read a particular author. What author is it?
It is Tolkien.
Okay. Question two. Joseph Gordon-Levitt, Tommy from Further Out from the Sun.
Use his proper name, Tommy from Further Out from the Sun.
Made his feature film debut in 1992 in a film about a large dog that causes havoc with an American family.
Right. What's the name of that film?
What's the name of the film?
Okay, because that was just a statement.
It was an implied question.
A large dog. Beethoven?
Okay, and question three. The vice principal is played by Richard Roundtree. What 1971 film is he famous for starring in?
Oh, Shaft.
Okay,
my questions. First question, also about The Pin. More specifically, about the man who plays him, Lucas Haas. Lucas Haas is the hero in which Tim Burton film? Late 90s Tim Burton film.
I think I know it. Pee-wee's Big Adventure?
Pee-wee's Big Adventure. Okay. Second question. Question two. Which of the following words or phrases is not slang for heroin?
Is not slang for heroin.
Okay. So?
This shows you how down I am with the kids.
A-bomb.
A-bomb.
Dust.
Yeah.
Keefs. China White. Horse. Smack. So which of those? I'll repeat them for you.
Yeah.
A-bomb. Dust. Keefs. China White. Horse. Smack.
You could just... Well, complete guess. I think dust, because it sounds like it should be something else.
And how old was Tommy from Third Rock from the Sun when he first starred in Third Rock from the Sun?
Oh, right. Oh, good question. 38?
Is that your final
answer? No. I'm going to guess 18.
Okay, answers please, Lewis.
Okay, answers. Question one. The Pin asks Brendan whether he's read a particular author. What author is it? Tolkien. Yes, you're right. He says his descriptions of things are really good. He makes you want to be there. In that voice.
We'll talk about that bit of dialogue in a bit. Yeah, carry on.
Question two.
I feel I should defend it, that's all. So okay. Carry on.
Tommy from Third Rock from the Sun made his feature film debut in 1992 in Beethoven. Yes, you're right. The large
Beethoven. Yeah. Yes!
Yeah. And the vice principal is played by Richard Roundtree, who was Shaft.
He was Shaft, of course. For you, out the following phrases words that are slang for heroin, which one is not slang? Yeah. A-bomb, dust, China White, Keefs, horse and smack. It is, in fact, Keefs that Keefs. Is made up. I based it on Keith Richards.
Oh, so you just made that up?
Yeah, that's completely made up. But A-bomb, dust, China White, horse, and of course smack are words for heroin.
Of course. You going to say them again?
No, just in case. And he was 15.
15?
Tommy Rock from Third Rock from the Sun.
Not 38.
He was 15 when he got the role as Tommy in Third Rock from the Sun.
Right, it's funny. It's funny how, you know, he's called Tommy and he got the role.
It's strange, isn't
Tommy.
It?
Yeah.
It is. Very odd. John Haas.
John Haas.
It was a good guess. He, in fact, is the hero in Mars Attacks.
Oh, Mars Attacks!
He's, of course, the young lad who takes his grandmother's records to kill all the aliens, the Martians.
Fantastic cameo by Tom Jones in that film.
It is.
Love it.
Great film. So, shall we see both of those?
Yeah.
Both of us have seen that, rather. Oh. Because I think that's quite underrated, that film.
Mm.
It gets a lot of people slagging off.
Yeah, it's one of those films that, you know, some, I think people just didn't get it.
Yeah, I don't know. Or perhaps we're just easily impressed.
Maybe.
So, I win again.
Well, I know. You're on a roll. This 2 weeks in a row, you got full marks.
So, look, going back to your comment about the dialogue, I'm surprised, actually, you're deriding that dialogue, because it's one bit of dialogue I think you can actually understand.
Yeah. Well, this is true. This film has a chronic affliction of mumbling. You can't understand what they're saying. There was one whole speech for one of the characters, Laura, and it's just unintelligible, completely unintelligible. I turned to you, I was like, what did she say? It got to the point where we actually tried to put the subtitles on because we couldn't understand what they were saying.
Now, that's quite unusual for us.
Yeah.
I think it's not like we're terrible at understanding American slang or anything like that. I think there was two main problems. It was really heavy on that kind of film noir slang, said, as you say, in a very quick, mumbly way.
Mm.
And yeah, we were concentrating watching it.
Yeah,
we weren't talking our way through or chatting. We were sitting in silence trying to watch it. Mm. But for the first 15 minutes, I had absolutely no idea what was going on.
I looked at you and I was just like, what is happening? Yeah. I have no idea. It's just... So, particularly when the film has such a complicated plot, you know, there's a lot of kind of backstabbing and kind of, like, character motivation that's just completely lost because you just don't know what they're saying.
I think we should also say that I think we are definitely in the minority here.
I know, it's funny. I was like, came away from the film thinking, I just don't get this. I just completely didn't see the appeal to it whatsoever. But I'm looking at all the internet reviews and, you know, all these great critics, and they're all giving it rave, rave reviews.
Yeah.
I did find one reviewer, though, that I think...
Now, I did tell you, Liz, before we started this, that you had to be positive. Even if you didn't particularly like the film, you still had to come up with some positive things.
Just read what they said. The title of this review was Kids Playing Grown-Ups Talking Nonsense. This is a very irritating film. It's like Bugsy Malone without the songs.
Yes.
It comes across as kids doing film noir for their school project badly. And it kind of continues in that vein. To be honest, that's kind of my feelings on it as well. It just feels like they're trying too hard and... It's like I've got a great idea. Let's do a film noir and like pay homage to all these films, but set it in a high school. Wouldn't that be funny? But it's just...
Well, it's based on a noveler, isn't it?
Is it?
Yeah. Oh, God, you did your research. It is based on a noveler, which I think actually that would probably work. It probably would work pretty well on the printed page.
Yeah.
I can imagine how you could go with it a lot more. Because I think your problem throughout the film, it seemed, was that you just kept saying, God, these are just kids. What? Whereas I think on the written word, on the printed page, you might not be able to buy into it. Yeah, you're not distracted so much by that. Yeah, I think it is interesting, kind of splicing different genres.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I suppose sometimes it does work.
Well, yeah, I mean, mix and matching genres. And you say there's a few kind of high school things, like what's the Alicia Silverstone film?
Oh, Clueless.
Clueless. That works really well. That's a great film. And, of course, The Faculty. Invasion of Body Snatchers in a high school setting.
Yep, that works. Buffy the Vampire Slayer. Vampire films in a high school.
And I think they work because they actually do take what it is to be in high school. Mm. And then they add a layer to that. And they add those genres. This film says it's sort of mixing and matching high school and... film noir, but it doesn't really.
Not to my
eyes.
No.
There's not even a scenes of him in a class.
No, it's true. It basically could be set anywhere, this film.
Yeah. Well, at the beginning, you were like, no, I think they're at university. I was like, no, I think it's supposed to be at school.
Yeah.
You were okay. Yeah.
I really didn't get it.
You don't get a sense at all of it being actually at school. I know that's for budgetary, because I know it was done on a tiny budget, this film.
Yeah.
Because there's lots of things, like it was edited... Using just a computer, one computer, like an Apple Macintosh.
Yeah, that's what editors do, isn't
it? No, but I know.
But it's not that strange.
It's a really small, it's
they
really
don't
low
use
budget.
Supercomputers because they're doing it films.
Filmotron 2000.
Yeah.
No, but you know what I mean? It's a really low budget film, but it looks really smart. But obviously where the savings come from is the very small cast, because it is a small cast.
Yeah.
So I guess they can't have huge, like, loads of kids running around and classroom scenes and that sort of thing. But because of that, it doesn't. You don't get a strong enough sense of it being in a school to juxtaposition that with the film noir bits.
Yeah, exactly. Like I said, it could be set anywhere.
Yeah, yeah. There isn't. There that. I don't think that is perhaps the flaw of the film.
Mm.
That's where it. That's what. For me, anyway.
Mm.
It's a really interesting idea. But it doesn't make enough of that idea.
Yeah.
It was too difficult to buy. It was too much of a leap to buy into.
Yeah.
Quite early on, that Tommy from Verdrop and Son finds a dead body, and then a little bit later, similar to kind of a detective in a film noir film. He's like, okay, cops are off this one. I'm going to try and investigate it myself.
Mm.
It's just too much of a leap for a high school student to do that.
Exactly. That's the thing. You know, he hides the body. Why does he hide the body? What possible reason has he got to do it?
Well, I think, but the thing is, you would accept that if it was a detective, if it was an adult doing that in a film noir film. I mean, you didn't allow yourself to go with it.
Mm. I fully admit I struggled to make the leap of faith required to kind of really enjoy the film. You know, if I just kind of thought, okay, just go with it, high school kids, you know, in a film noir, fine. But even going beyond that, it's like, well, why? What is the point of doing this?
Well, I mean, it's interestingly, I found your kind of attitude towards the film a sort of funny reflection of my attitude towards Inception, where I could, again going back to the link with Tommy.
Yeah.
I couldn't get into Inception because I just found the idea of the dream parts. I was just like, well, they're not like dreams. And for that whole thing, I just couldn't buy into the internal logic of the film.
That's it. It kind of loses
that,
you.
That a wall went up and I just struggled to then enjoy that film. And I think you have done that with this film.
Yeah. No, I agree. I fully admit it. Because obviously there's people who write about this who are just raving about it, saying it's fantastic.
Yeah.
But
Connor, obviously, for one.
Connor, you know, sorry, Connor.
And judging by the rest of the films he recommends, some of which you've seen, good taste in films.
Exactly. It's just, I've got this block on this one. I just can't get past it. But, I don't know. It's just one of those things. It's like, the idea, I think, was bad, just from the start.
Well, I mean, far be it from us to suggest ways of doing it better. But I think what would perhaps have been a way that for you to have gone with it and for me to have got more in with it, because I think I did enjoy it a little bit more than you, but you're right, I for a long time struggled with the idea it was just kids doing this.
Yeah.
Would be for the main character, what's his name, Brendan, to be someone who's either really into those type of films or kind of like in his own little world, treating this horrific thing that everyone else is treating in a very realistic way, but he's treating it in a very noir way. And as the film progresses, he slowly kind of draws people into his world. People start acting as their archetypes from those films.
Mm.
And it ends up turning into a film noir film. But it's all from his perspective.
Yeah, something like that would work quite well. Or like, we did Rushmore a few weeks back, and that kind of dealt with the idea of kind of kids acting like adults. Just by, again, the similar way, the adults kind of being sucked into kind of the way these kids are speaking. Yeah. But then every now and then they're revealed to be the kind of children they actually are.
Yeah.
So there are ways of doing it.
Well, there are only two adults in the whole film.
Yeah.
You have Shaft, Richard Roundtree, playing the vice principal.
Yeah.
And you have the mother of the pin, the drug dealer. And actually, I thought that the mother being there was the one bit of the film which I felt worked quite well, the juxtaposition of these kind of children.
Yeah.
And this kind of mother figure.
Yeah.
Where you see, like, they're having this very tense, kind of very, villain and hero meet for the first time, face each other across a table.
Yeah.
And the villain's mother is serving, getting some apple juice.
And some milk and
cookies. And some milk and cookies. And I thought that actually was quite funny.
Yeah.
Making them look really childlike.
Yeah.
I think also the other problem was the actual issue he was investigating wasn't a silly, fluffy thing. It was a brutal murder.
Yeah.
Of a young girl. If, in a way, he'd been investigating a lesser crime and treating it deadly serious, I think, in a funny way, you could have gone with it more.
Yeah.
But because it was actually such a horrific crime, you're like, well, you definitely have to call the police.
Yeah, exactly. It's just, I don't know, it's just too much of a leap of faith for me. I just couldn't go with it. And the way it is played so straight, that you kind of, you either have to completely take it in, or there's no kind of like knowing wink to the audience kind of thing. You know, oh, we know they're kids, but you know, just go with it. It's more just accept this.
Yeah.
You know, and but my big thing with it is like, what is the point? I just don't get it. I mean, it's actually quite a good film noir if you took it out of that situation. You know, in terms of story. So just make a film noir. Don't do a high school film noir.
Yeah, I think some of the reviews I did read, it was like, you know, really interesting, you know, showing the cliques and social strata of high school. I was like, it doesn't really do that.
No, it doesn't.
It doesn't really touch on that. I think people are looking, seeing more of that than there actually is. There is the bit where he kind of, I suppose what you describe as the femme fatale figure of the film.
Yeah.
What's her name? Laura. Is it Laura?
I think it's Laura.
Yeah, it's Laura, yeah. And her boyfriend is a kind of jock-like guy.
Mm.
And so the jock and Brendan have a bit of a face-off.
Yeah.
Brad, I think the jock's name is. They have a sort of face-off halfway through. They have a bit of a fight. But it's not really they keep saying, oh, he's a loner. Yeah, in all the descriptions, a high school loner, excluded from other groups. You don't really see that.
No, not
You don't
at
really
all.
Get a really sense of that. It's more or less, it's sort of said at one point. He's, you know, when he's investigating, you know, the when he you see a scene with his ex-girlfriend short before she was killed, and he's talking about, oh, I'm losing you to this group. But I don't know,
it's difficult. I feel like the film tries to run before it can walk, really. It just launches straight in with this character from out of nowhere, and immediately it's kind of investigating this kind of murder, and you're like, well, who is this character? You know, where does he come from? You know, what's the context for this situation? And it just tries, it's so kind of obtuse in the way it kind of introduces everything. It's just like almost deliberately obscure.
I mean, I don't think either of us would be or against films which require, you know, chuck you in the deep end.
No. Yeah, it's definitely, I mean, I don't mind difficult films, you know, but I just felt like this was just willfully obscure. Yeah. Anyway, I think we've kind of done the film in enough. Let's talk about some of the positives.
Well, as I said, it's amazingly shot.
Yeah.
And directed.
Very reminiscent of Chinatown. There's kind of big, kind of wide vistas of parched hills. And
I think that was, from what I understand, it was done on purpose to really draw. It draws a lot of influences from Chinatown, from the Maltese Falcon.
Yeah, there's a falcon features quite prominently in it, doesn't it?
I think it's a falcon, yeah. Well, yeah.
I'm guessing that's a reference to the Maltese Falcon.
I guess so. I think we made a hazard a guess there. But, yeah, and as you say, yeah, those wide open spaces from Chinatown, lots of great use of just silhouettes of shade and light, of those kind of... it's always connected to kind of like American films that kind of loads that kind of harsh artificial lighting in at night.
Yeah, it's good. It's kind of got this washed out look, which really suits the atmosphere. And bizarrely, they kind of like close ups on people's shoes. Do you notice that? Lots of shoe close ups, which is quite unusual. I've not really seen that done before. Hey guys, close up of shoes.
Yeah, camera two on shoe. And as I said, the very limited interactions there are with adults are both quite good. Especially the one I felt with the vice principal, played by Richard Roundtree. It's done, the vice principal sort of takes the role, I guess, of the kind of police detective.
The police captain.
Yeah, I'll let you give you some space on this. But
you're a maverick, Tommy from the Sun, but I like your style.
But in a funny way, up until that point, I think, like you, I was like, this is just okay. I mean, I was waiting for them to put it in context or contextualise it, or almost give an explanation as to why he's being treated so seriously, he's treating it so seriously, why he's not called the police. Mm. After that scene, it's so ridiculous the way he talks to him.
Yeah.
Yeah, he does. It is exactly like it. All right, I'm going to, you work for me. He goes, I don't work for you anymore.
Mm.
You know, that wasn't part of the deal and all that sort of stuff. And after that, I was like, okay, I'm just going to accept it.
Yeah, I've just got to accept it
because there is no way of not, there's no explanation. Mm. They're not going to give an explanation.
Mm.
So I either just, we either turn this film off.
Mm.
Or we just go with this now.
Yeah.
And after that scene, I kind of went with it.
You kind of, whereas the opposite happened to me. I was just, oh, like, really? Oh, this is This is stupid. No, Shaft's giving him a dressing down like he's in the police or something. I was just like,
want your gun, your badge.
I was like, I've never had a conversation with my deputy head teacher like this.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think the trouble with all of this kind of, you know, knowing kind of, you know, accepting this kind of fallacy, I guess, is that you don't really invest anything in the characters. I didn't really care for any of the characters whatsoever.
Yeah, I suppose, yeah.
It just felt, because of that remove that you were...
The artifice of the whole thing.
Yeah. You didn't really invest anything in the characters, which made it harder to care when, you know, big things happen.
So
I just struggled. I really struggled with this film.
Again, trying to get back to the positives. Some standout scenes. Yeah. Things that really impressed you.
I quite like some of the early setups. I particularly like the phone meet. I think it was quite nice to see call boxes used in films again. Because they are a great movie device that sadly has been kind of left by the wayside with the advent of mobile phones.
That's another thing, I guess, is you said, like, why does no one have a mobile phone? I think there is one use of a mobile phone.
Yeah.
The kind of brain, I suppose, who's kind of like plays the kind of informer.
Yeah.
He's sort of supposed to be like a nerdy kid at school, but he plays the kind of informer guy, knows everything about what's going on, knows all the kind of inside, yeah, the inside track on everyone, and does his research and helps Tommy investigate. And we can't have the fact we just call him Tommy.
I know, I just got to call Brendan, him Tommy.
Brendan. So he, the brain is the only one with a mobile phone. I think it's, again, part of the artifice or part of the thing that you have to kind of go with the fact that no one else has a mobile phone, that they have to use call boxes lots.
Yeah. It's obviously, you know, great, reminiscent of the Maltese Falcon.
There is a way of just slamming down the receiver.
I know, yeah. Satisfying, isn't it?
Yeah, that kind of sound it makes, clank, as they slam down the receiver and walk away.
Yeah. Shame that doesn't happen more in movies. Does it happen in Crank 2?
I'm sure it does.
Well, you know, maybe
I'm sure
that...
it does. Well, that was one thing at the end of the... That's perhaps a slightly damning thing. At the end of this, you did say, oh, I think that was more ludicrous than Crank.
It's true, I did. There's a new prize for stupidest film I've seen this year.
Okay. So, if you didn't think it was a great idea for a movie, Lewis, do you feel you've got a better one? Do you have a great idea for a movie?
Set up. That's very good. Well, yes, I do. It's a very short one.
Good.
Taking the idea of this film, do a film noir set in a high school. Two words: Casablanca nursery.
I'm sure. I think Muppets babies. Casablanca episode.
It's been done. But yeah, I mean that.
Was that it? Okay, right, that is sure.
Two words, I tell you.
Two words. Casablanca nursery.
I'm not sure what you could have as a stand-in for Paris.
Always Playmobil toys. Plaster of Paris.
We'll always have Plaster of Paris. Mushy. That works quite well.
yeah, I think... Alright, so normally towards the end of this, we talk about the weaknesses.
Maybe we should flip it around and talk about the strengths.
Well, we've mentioned a couple of strengths, the cinematography, the performances.
Tommy.
I think it is well played. I think actually everyone does quite well. All the performances are pretty good, isn't it?
Yeah, I think so, when you can understand what they're saying.
Yeah, I think that is an issue.
It is really bad. I mean, this does seem to be like a trend in American indie films where they think it's okay just to mumble through the dialogue.
Well, this is the second one we've seen.
Well, no, not there are. We watched Monsters the other week, and again, we really didn't get on with that one. Just
no,
because,
we didn't really enjoy that at all.
Just mumbling, mumble, mumble, mumble.
Yeah, there was, and I think there comes a point where you have to balance. Actually having people being able to understand what's being said, and also having that kind of realistic dialogue. But the thing is, it's not realistic, is it? That's the most annoying thing.
I
think the more other annoying thing.
Yeah.
If you felt like, I know, for example, in The Wire, where it's all really kind of, the sort of the slang and street talk and police kind of slang, you feel you're getting an insight into a world. This world does not exist
Yeah.
So, and it's not even like a world building in the sense that it's a fictional world. It's just up its own arse, isn't it?
That's it. That's exactly it. It's just, I don't know. It's a, oh, clever, look at me. And you're like, yeah, it's not that great.
But as we said, we are definitely in the minority.
Definitely, yeah. I feel like it's the Emperor's New Clothes or something. Can anyone else see the Emperor naked?
Yeah, that, or we're just not bright enough to get it. Everyone has to go, whoa, what? The dialogue was fine. I can understand that.
Trainspotting, no problem. I can understand everything in that.
Perhaps we just haven't watched enough film noir films. Films that this draws.
No, I've seen plenty of film noirs.
Yeah, I guess we have. Okay, fair enough. Okay, well, so I'm guessing we probably wouldn't recommend this film.
I don't think so. Great name, though. Great name for a film.
It is interesting. It is different.
Yeah.
It's unusual. And I think going back to the Zardoz argument, you've always got to admire someone who's trying something new and trying something unusual.
Yeah.
Even if it doesn't quite work out, it's better just churning out the same old rubbish.
You've got to experiment.
Yeah, exactly. It's an interesting experiment. I think it doesn't quite work for us.
No.
But obviously, it does work for a lot of other people.
Yeah.
So perhaps I wouldn't say, yeah, I definitely should see it, but I would say, yeah, I didn't particularly enjoy it, but a lot of other people enjoy it. Perhaps you're one of them.
And on that wishy-washy note...
don't want to upset Connor.
I know. I feel bad for Connor. Connor, we like your other films. It's just this one
I'm sure we're going to enjoy it. I'm sure. Yeah. I mean, from what the first part of Big Lebowski, it was great. And you've seen it.
You would love Big Lebowski.
We'll do that. Yeah. We'll do that soon, Connor. Don't worry.
Anyway, please check out our blog at 101films.wordpress.com.
Join our Facebook group and follow us on Twitter. Both you can find links on our blog.
And you can email us at 101filmsyoushouldhaveseen@gmail.com.
And, of course, this podcast marks... It's podcast 26, so it marks... We're over a quarter of our way there, Lewis.
Wow. Exciting. Is that all?
75% done.
Yay!
75% to go.
Well, I'm quite enjoying it.
Yeah. It's suddenly, I don't know, it doesn't feel that long away now, the end. No. In a strange way, just doing a quarter... Before we know it, it'll be a third, and then a half.
And then we can all go home.
Yeah, then we can finally... Oh no, we can finally stop watching films. It's a dead medium.
Anyway, goodbye.
Bye.